Rose Quinn podcast. Today I have the lovely Diane Zenna with me talking about her debut novel, The All Night Sun, which came out just a few weeks ago. And she has a crazy story to getting published, one that, you know, shows that it isn't just get an agent, sell your book, and you're good. Like, things happen, things change, and it might be a little bumpier than you might expect. But she is so wonderful, and I think you guys are really gonna love listening to her. So let's just get right to it. So Diane, thank you so much for chatting with me today. Can you start by telling us about your novel, The All Night Sun?
Of course, thank you. Well, it follows a lonely writing professor named Lauren, who has been long grieving the deaths of her parents alone, and she's been living at a remove from everyone and everything in her life for a long time, and she forms this fast, really emotional connection with an 18-year-old international student in her class named Siri, who invites her to visit her home in Sweden in the summer. And she describes to Lauren that everything in Sweden will be green and fresh and just thawing out. And that sounds to Lauren like a reprieve from her grief. It sounds like someplace that she can go and just shake off that shell that she's been carrying around with her for so long. And so she impulsively decides to go, but with other thawing out, things are soon uncovered, and Lauren starts to worry that Siri is not all that she seems. And she has to go through a lot of a lot more darkness when she gets over there than she anticipated. But at the end, I think that it's a really beautiful story where you can really see what this friendship meant to both people. And it's a very personal novel for me, as I too lost my parents young and formed a friendship with an international student and traveled to Sweden with her at a time when I deeply needed to heal from grief.
I love that. I love that there's, and I feel like all authors, you know, like have little pieces of themselves in their, the books that they write though, but it sounds like this one's super special and close to, you know, the trials that you've been through in your life. So that sounds wonderful.
Thanks. I feel, but that's probably true for more authors than they are willing to admit. I think that people are afraid to talk about the autobiographical nature of their work.
Yeah.
Because it makes them feel like maybe they are not as much of an artist as they long to be. And I think that really, I just want people to own that for themselves. I want writers to be able to own that and to be able to express those things so deeply on the page.
I think that having, you know, autobiographical pieces of your novel or your characters or everything kind of makes it even more special. Like, I've always noticed in my writing things that I'm like, oh yeah, this is totally about my relationship with this person, or you know, like in my real life. And I feel like that makes it stronger. It makes it more real because other people have those same struggles and will see themselves in that.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, I'm excited for that to come out. And can you tell us a little bit about your journey to getting to this point where you have a book that's coming out?
Yes. Yeah. It's been about 12 years since I had the dream that inspired the story, the original outline for my novel, which changed so much over the years. But it did start with a little dream. I woke up and ran to the computer and quickly outlined 20 chapters, and that's when I knew, okay, I really have to write this out. I have the backbone here of a story that I really want to tell, but it did take about 12 years, and it is a much grumpier road than I think a lot of people would expect to hear. I actually sold the novel about 4 or 5 years ago, and the acquiring editor, the first editor, really loved it. But as happens with some authors, my editor wound up getting a new job at another publishing house.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And so this was just a few months into our time together, and she had been wonderful and was so insightful and I loved working with her. And so I begged her, can I please come with you? And she said that the contract remained with the original publishing house and that they wanted to publish it. And so I was going to be assigned a new editor. And it took a few months before they finally got back to me. And they did give me a new editor, but this person was not very well respected and very, you know, obviously an excellent editor in so many different ways. But she wanted me to reconstruct the novel in a linear narration. The way that my novel was and is today, it's about grief, and so it goes back and forth in time a lot.
Yeah.
The way that memory does, memory invades your everyday goings on, right?
Yeah.
But she wanted me to make it all linear from start to end, and at first I really rejected that idea, but then I thought, okay, well, maybe there's something to learn from this, and I recognized that there were gaps in the story that even I didn't know yet, and so I thought, well, by putting it in this linear fashion, maybe I'll see all those other elements of the story. And so I agreed to do it, and I thought, well, if it doesn't work out, then we'll just go back to the original way that we had put it together in the beginning. And so I did it, and I wrote it all out, and it was so much work. And I sent it to her, and she came back, and she said, it's still not working. We're going to cancel the book.
Wow.
And that was devastating to me and to my family to have gotten so close to that dream coming true, and then to have it all just taken away. It was a nightmare.
Yeah.
And it was really hard for me to even look at the manuscript after that. My agent, who is an angel, she is amazing and stood by me through all of it. She assured me, you know, we sold it once, we can sell it again, you know, as soon as you are ready to go back out with it in the format that you want it to be presented to the world, let me know and we'll try to sell it again. And it took me a long time. I mean, I thought, okay, I'm going to just rally and get this done. But it was really emotional. And I remember, I think that happened in May of 2016. And I was set to go to the Sewanee Writers Conference that summer. I had just gotten accepted there. It was my first time ever getting accepted to one of these big summer writing conferences. And I was really, you know, excited to go. But in my application, I had said, you know, I am going to have this big novel coming out. And I thought that possibly that's why they accepted me, right? And so all of that imposter syndrome that
yes.
people have, it was on fire. So I contacted them, and I said, hey, I just want you to know that my novel actually got canceled, and maybe you don't want me there anymore. I don't know, but I just thought I'd check with you. And one of the gentlemen who has run the conference for a long time, Adam Newsom, he's just amazing. He called me and he said, no, we really want you here. We wanted you here on the basis of your work, and we want you to join us. So I went, and, you know, all of that imposter syndrome feeling that I would have had anyway, going to this big conference and studying with all of these amazing authors, it was at, like, level 100,
because I
was also feeling like I was now surrounded by all these people who were so full of hope and right on the edge of achieving their dreams, and I had already had mine crushed. But I went with my family, and my daughter was 4 at the time, and I went with my husband. And that conference in particular is really good to families. So they have family housing, and in my case, they suggested this off-campus location, which was this beautiful convent on the side of a mountain, and we had a cabin that was right on the edge of a cliff. It was probably the worst place to take my 3-year-old
because oh my I was so nervous
the whole time, but it was a really nice reprieve from the day, you know, so I could go there and be really intense about writing, and then have this chance to come home and be with my family and just be myself and just, you know, gather myself there. So that was a really good experience. But on the last day of the conference, I had my one-on-one meeting with my workshop leader, And my workshop leader was Alice McDermott, who is just a phenomenal author, but also a phenomenal human being, so generous. And I didn't know if I was going to tell her the story of what happened to me, but as we got started talking, it just came out, yeah. And I just told her everything. And, you know, the tears were flowing, and I didn't have any control of my mouth anymore. I was just going. And it was so awesome because she, well, first of all, she started cursing like a sailor on my behalf.
I'm sure.
She was like really, really, you know, on my side, and she was just wanted to give me so much good advice. But she really said, you know, I can see that you are feeling this anxiety about wanting to get this back out there as soon as possible and try to sell it again as fast as you can. But you need to take, when you've been through something, you need to take all the time you need to make that story yours again. And there was something about that that really touched me and helped me see clearly. A lot of the anxiety fell away. And that night, that evening, when I went back to the convent, the cabin, I went to my computer case, my laptop case, and I had been carrying around with me, a little obsessively, the last notes that that previous editor had sent me on my book, and looking at them all the time, trying to figure out what went wrong, what did I do wrong.
Yeah.
And they were tucked inside that case. And so I took them, and I went outside to the cliff.
Yes.
And I balled them up into the tightest little white snowball I could make, and I threw them off the side of the mountain.
I love it.
And I just said, from this point forward, it's just going to be my story, and it's going to be accepted somewhere, or it's not.
Yeah.
And I worked really hard, got it back together in a format that felt right to me, went back and forth with my agent a couple more times before we went out on submission again. But when we did it, it didn't take very long at all, just a few months. We had a lot of interest, and I found the editor who was really right for this book. She was able to empathically talk about my characters and the story in a way that made me feel like she totally knew them. You know, if I said something about them, you know, she would say, oh, but I don't think that she would do that. You know, so she could, she talked about them like they were real people.
Yeah.
And it really made me feel seen. And I thought at that moment, if nothing else happens with this book, at least I've had this experience where I felt that someone really understood what I was trying to put out there. And with an autobiographical type story, that was really huge for me. So yeah, we sold the book again to this amazing publishing house. We sold it to Random House, which was just a dream come true.
Yeah.
And I will also say that we sold it the same week that I learned I had breast cancer.
Oh my goodness.
So the year of developmental and copywriting and all your copy editing edits, all of that happened while I was having surgeries and grieving for my family and going through treatments. All of that was happening concurrently. So it was just a really, it was a year of like the best and the worst all mushed together.
Yes, very high emotions, I'm sure, the
yes,
whole entire
yes.
year. Well, are you okay now?
Oh, yeah. I'm doing much better now.
Good.
And I'm just looking forward to this thing being out in the world and connecting with readers who for whom I might have written this book.
Yes, and I think your journey is so unique, but also, I think, important for, you know, other authors and people who are working on getting an agent and all of that to hear, because you're not the only person, you know, who's had a book where you've like sold it and then it gets canceled and something else crazy happens, right? I think a lot of the times in our minds, as we get this dream to be like, I'm going to be a published author, you think, okay, I signed my agent, I sell my book and I'm done and it's like finished and you know, like my book will be out there. But things can happen. Crazy things like what you went through are definitely possible for everybody to experience. I love that you persevered and made the book your own again, which is so important because, you know, I think it just goes to show, too, that, like, having an agent who loves your work as much as you do is important, but also the editor needs to love your work and understand it, like you talked about, as much as you do. Because they're...
Oh, yeah.
You don't want them to change it too much. They change it for the better in the ways that they are really amazing at, but you don't want to lose, you know, what sparked it for you.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I love it. Thank you for sharing that with us. So let's backtrack a little bit. So before you signed with your agent and had to go through that real bumpy road, how did you approach querying? And then if you could just share any tips you have for writers who are in that querying process right now.
Sure. So I started searching for an agent for my book in, I guess, the summer of 2009. And in this span of time, I sent probably about 200 random queries. I had many agents ask for partials or fulls, and several who asked me to revise and resubmit to them, and I was always doing that. I was always editing and trying on other people's visions for the book.
Yeah.
And, you know, no one would ever wind up taking it on. I went to a conference and I learned how to write the perfect query letter. That was the whole purpose of this 3-day conference. And I probably left with more questions than I went in with. And I had a baby, and so I did nothing for a full year other than, you know, look longingly at my computer. Then I connected with an agent assistant who suggested really specific revisions that seemed right at the time. But she was so different from me personality-wise. That we were just not able to communicate well. And I made the scary decision at that point to walk away from her, not knowing if anyone would ever take my book on again.
Yeah.
But after that, I did another solid revision on my own, and I happened across the website, which a lot of your listeners probably already know about, called Publishers Marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the website that everyone in the publishing industry, agents, editors, writers, PR folks use. And at the time, there was like a $20 monthly membership. So I just joined for the month, and I found that they had something called a deal makers search function, where you could put in the type of book that you have, that you're writing, and it would send back to you a list of the top 100 agents in that category.
Wow.
Based on what they have sold in that category recently.
Hmm.
And so I mentioned at the start that I sent out about 200 random queries in 5 years. And the key word there is random.
Yeah.
Basically, if I just saw an agent's name on Twitter or listed in Writer's Market and it said that they might be willing to represent literary fiction, which is my category, I sent them a query, but who knows if they actually ever sold anything in that category, right? for some, they might just be willing to look at it. So, so I sent out way too many random things, but this time, after doing the dealmaker search on Publishers Marketplace, I looked at that list of 100 agents much more carefully, and I looked to see if there were agents in that list who were representing authors who I really loved, and then I narrowed it down to 10, and I said, I'm going to try these 10 folks, and when I did that, things dramatically shifted for me. From those 10 queries that I sent out, I immediately got 6 people saying they were interested.
Wow.
Who wanted to talk to me right away. I fell in absolute love with the first agent I spoke to, and when I asked her what the appropriate thing to do was with regard to those other agents who'd wanted phone calls, she said just to email them and let them know that I had an offer as a courtesy, and then speak to them if I wanted to speak with them, and then come back to her with a decision. And as soon as I did that, the same day, I had 3 solid offers from the agents, and I was in a unique position of being able to choose the one who was right for me, which was the first person I'd spoken to, and wow, that was the best decision I ever made.
That's awesome.
So, that was a really big turning point for me, that website, Publishers Marketplace. the tips for writers who are in the coloring process right now, I would just say believe in yourself. Two really important things. I wouldn't do the random, you know, throwing things at the wall to see what sticks method, right? Because it dehumanizes you, it dehumanizes the agent and the whole process, right? There is someone out there who really wants to connect with and champion your work. And by doing some deeper investigation into what they like to represent, what they love, you know, you're going to be finding someone who, you know, is going to take it much more seriously. And yeah, you don't need to do that to yourself. It was almost at that point when I was sending it to everyone that I could find, it was almost like I believed that the only way I'm going to make this happen is if I win the lottery of agents.
Right.
It's a numbers game and someone will want this.
Yeah.
Right?
If I just send enough queries, somebody will want it.
Right. And it just dehumanizes the whole journey. So I would just say not to do that. And then the other thing, you know, with regards to believing in yourself, I think a lot about this critique partner that I had years ago, and she was really frustrated all the time about, you know, other friends who were having more success than she was, and she spent a lot of our time together wanting affirmation for her work, and her work was so good. I loved reading her stories. They were just so beautiful. The writing was beautiful. The idea was beautiful. But she was just so burdened down with this feeling like she just needed affirmation from everyone, and specifically from me. And it just dawned on me after I heard that she had stopped writing this and had stopped writing completely that, you know, you can't go on in this endeavor depending on the affirmation of others.
Yeah.
You know, it's really something that is inside of you. You know, sometimes it's very, very small, sometimes a very, very little flame. But if you know that it's there, if you believe that that's there and you can feel it there, then you must believe in yourself and not give up, because it's meant for you. Right, and that's going to sustain you even when there's no one out there who is affirming the work that you're doing.
Right, and I think that's so important, because writing is very much a solitary thing, and while critique partners are, you know, awesome and can really help shape up your story, you have to, even when you're, like, struggling and drowning in imposter syndrome, you still have to be like, okay, no, like, I'm doing this for a reason. I'm good. And remind yourself of that. And it can be so hard. But, yeah, that's always sad to me when I see people just, like, giving up because of those things. Or, you know, you see other, you know, friends and all that who get the agent deals and sell their book. And you're like, what? I'm doing the same thing they are. Like, why am I not there, too?
Right.
Yeah. Well, I love that advice. So let's talk a little bit about writing and now being an author. And, you know, your book hasn't come out yet, so I know that you might not answer these questions the same way you would after August. But what's the hardest part of writing for you? And then what's the hardest part of being an author?
Oh, okay. Well, I think it's always going to be, you know, it's making the time to write for me.
Yeah.
You know, and as I was about to say that, I could hear, like, all the voices of all the writers that I admire saying, if it matters to you, you will make the time. But, you know, it's a fact of life, you know. So many of us work full-time jobs. We have family pressures, maybe illness bearing down on us.
Yeah.
You know, the stuff of life, it really does make it difficult, not just to get to your desk, but to be in the mind frame to open up and put something on the page that is meaningful and that you want to revisit the next day, right? So that's the hardest part for me, going through my recent illness, being a mom to a young child who always wants, you know, the attention and,
for sure, you know,
trying to steal away.
Yes.
And, you know, away from myself, you know, it's always hard, you know, when you have these, you want to be the best at everything that you're doing. And sometimes it feels like taking a little time for yourself is making it more difficult for you to be excellent in other areas of your life.
That is, yeah, that's something I totally relate to. I have two kids, and I always feel, like, a little bit guilty when I'm like, I want to write, but I need to be with them and pay attention to them, too. It's a really hard, like, decision. So, you know, you end up doing it late at night or early in the morning or whenever you have the chance to.
And you know what's so funny is that right now I'm speaking to you from my car at the parking lot that I always write in. So whenever I think about writing or doing anything related to writing, I come here. And it's because when my daughter was an infant, and I was, you know, given time to write by my husband,
yep,
I would go out with the intention of going to a little cafe somewhere and setting up. But I never wanted to be that far away from her in case something happened. So I just go around the corner to this little shopping center and sit in the car and write. And it just happens, it so happens that now I do that all the time. But this feels like the most comfortable place for me, that where I can just pack up the computer and, you know, gun the gas and get home as fast as I can in case something bad happens.
Oh my gosh, I love it. But that's what you have to do sometimes. You gotta break away. And I had to do that the other day. I was finishing a rewrite that I've been working on, and I was like so distracted in my house. My kids weren't even home, but I was just like, you know, you look at everything that you have to do, and I was like, I need to leave. I need to go somewhere else. Like, I didn't drive very far. I just found some other place to write, but at least that's good. You know where you can go to get things done when you have the chance.
Yes. And now the muse makes me here outside of Marshall's and Bath & Body Works.
That's the best. So that's the hardest part of writing for you. But what so far has been the hardest part of being an author?
I think owning it in a sense. I you know, imposter syndrome is still pretty big for me. And my full time job is that I work for the Association of Writers and Writing Programs. So one thing that I do for them is I run a mentorship program. The Writer to Writer Mentorship Program, where I've matched many hundreds of writers over the years with established authors and lived vicariously watching their relationships develop from the sidelines.
Yeah.
But so I've always sort of seen myself as a champion for writers and trying to be a really good literary citizen and helping make those connections for other people. And now suddenly it's happening to me. And it just feels, it's not a role that I am used to yet, you know, so it's taking me a little bit of time to say that, okay, I can also do this part of it too.
Yeah.
You know, it can also be for me.
I can definitely see that, how you got to transition into it, and I'm sure as debut year continues and you get closer to it, there'll be some more things that, you know, will be like, oh my goodness, this is really happening.
That's right.
Well, let's flip this question around and let's talk about the best parts of being a writer and being an author for you.
Oh my goodness. I just have so many ideas. I just have a long list of ideas of the next stories that I will tell. And, you know, I mentioned that I've been working on this book for 12 years of my life, you know, and to the exclusion of almost everything else. And so I just feel like I've burst open and I am ready to dive into all these other stories that have been on the periphery for so long. So that's something really exciting to me, that I might be able to share some of these other important stories with readers in the years to come.
Yeah, you got to work on something brand new. That's exciting.
Yeah.
But also the blank page is a little bit terrifying. For me, at least. I was working on the same book, not for 12 years, but for, like, the last 2.5. And then when I started to draft something new, I was like, what? How do I even do this? Have I done this before?
Always.
What's going
on? That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's so refreshing to be able to write about anyone else other than
yes.
The same characters that I've fallen in love with and I've lived with for so long. But just to be able to create another world, it's dying, and I'm excited about that.
Well, I'm excited too. I'm sure it'll be something just as wonderful and meaningful that will blossom.
Thanks.
So let's talk about your writing style a little bit. Do you know the difference between a pantser and a planner?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So
sure.
which one are you more of, or are you somewhere in between?
I think I'm somewhere in between. I think most of us are. But I really feel that it's when I am able to sit down and write out an outline for myself, that's when I'm telling myself it's time to get serious. And then it's almost, it's just so clear to me where I have to go each day when I sit down to write that it feels just really invigorating to have that plan.
Yeah.
The more, there is something luxurious, I think, about writing from the seat of my pants and just seeing where a story will take me. And I love to do that too, but I think that I've had so much success with outlining things for myself that I'm just very attracted to that style.
I found that I start off as more of a pantser, and then to the point where I get, like, stuck, and then I'm like, okay, no, I need to actually write it out. But I like the, you know, I like to just, like, free flow, like, get kind of the basic idea out, and then, yeah, I definitely have to, like, plot where I'm gonna go. But I've learned that, because when I first started writing, like, seriously, I was like, okay, if I make my outline, I have to stick to it no matter what. And that's where I got myself into trouble. So now I'm like, okay, I plot, and then it changes as I go along.
Yeah, the book that I'm working on right now, I've allowed myself to write without an outline so much that I envisioned it as a novel, but it's really becoming a novel in stories. And I worry that I'm not going to be able to find the through line to connect them all because I haven't planned it more.
Yeah.
I think that once I sit down and I figure out what comes, just outline it from here forward, I think I'll be able to complete it. But it has allowed me to feel a lot more freedom writing these shorter pieces. And maybe that's how they're supposed to exist. I'm not sure.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your love of writing. So I know you said that for the All Night Sun, you had a dream that kind of sparked that idea for you of what you wanted to write. Was this, you know, like your first venture into writing, or how did your love of writing really begin?
Oh, no. Yeah, so I started writing when I was a child, really obsessively. And that's when I was probably about 12 years old or so, I had my first draft of a novel.
Yes.
That I had been working on for a long time. And I still remember, like, those obsessive nights writing it in on my old word processor in my bedroom.
I love it.
All of the characters' names came from TV shows that I used to watch. and I remember there was one character, oh my goodness, that was named Jalad from that Bodies in Motion exercise program.
Oh,
I don't know if you
nice.
Remember that. It's like a very 80s, like, exercise, like aerobicized kind of thing. But he was in my book. But I was not looking back. It was a pretty deep story that I was putting together at that age. And I just always loved to write. I was, always imagining myself as a writer from a very young age. And when I went to college, I took every creative writing class I could take. I took them all. And my teacher at the time suggested that I take additional classes at the local community college. So I did that, and that's where I met a really instrumental professor for me. He was the one who encouraged me to apply to graduate schools in creative writing up until that year that I was my senior year at college. I didn't even know that was an option. I didn't really think about it that way. But he helped me put together my applications, and I got my MFA a couple of years later from the University of Florida. That was in 1998. So when I was there, I wrote as my thesis a book of short stories. But in my final year, I also started work on the first novel that I put together, the one that got shelved. Everybody has at least one of those,
yes,
I think.
Yes, definitely.
So I was experimenting with the form for a long time before I put together the one I've done. And so it's just been a lifelong journey for me.
I love it. I love that, you know, you remember those early stories from when you were young. I can remember the first, like, my first attempt at a novel was a very, like, dark story for how old I was, but I think that's sort of just that I write really dark things now, so I'm like, okay, it's just, I was just preparing myself and my parents, probably.
Yes, yes.
and for a while, I was really into screenplays and was gonna be a screenwriter, and I think, you know, trying different things and writing in different ways and formats is always really helpful, but I love that you remember, you know, those early stories. That's so fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and just the feeling of it. Just
yes.
This feeling that was so, in those early days, like as a child writing, and just feeling like my whole body was consumed with it.
Which is why you still do it today, right? Because you have the, you fell in love with it. It's part of you.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, let's talk about your revision process. So I'd love to hear a little bit about what that looks like. Now, you have an agent and an editor who are super helpful and crucial in that process. But for maybe those who are listening who don't have those resources yet, what do you do before you send, or, you know, what did you do before you sent work to your agent and editor to kind of help you revise your own work?
Well, I think especially because I do take such a long time to finish my projects, when I read through a draft, I usually read through to make sure the voice is consistent and that the flow is still there, even though I may have been working on this for many, many months or years. And so I try to read from start to end, and I do so with an Excel spreadsheet open on the computer at the same time. And so whenever I come across something that feels off with maybe something factual I want to look up again, or some piece of information that doesn't seem like it makes sense, I will quickly jot down the page number and a note to myself, and I keep going so as not to break the rhythm of reading it aloud or reading it to myself.
Yeah.
And so I will number all of these issues and then go back and deal with them one at a time. And there's something about putting them on a spreadsheet, which in itself is sort of cold and formal, that takes a lot of the emotion of revision out. So when I see maybe a sentence that I've loved for years that, you know, has been there for years because I've just kind of glazed over it, or because I just like the sound of it, but maybe it's not making the most sense where it is, isolating it on the spreadsheet helps me to look at it more objectively.
Yeah.
And help me to make a decision about changing it or removing it. And so I've done that for a long time, even before I had my agent, as a way to keep track of things that I want to fix in my stories or my novel. And then it was so helpful to me when developmental edits started coming back from my agent or my editor. Because that way, you know, there's always emotion when you see, like, their marks in track changes on Microsoft Word, you know, and you're like, oh, they didn't like that, I love that part, and instead of getting so tied up in it, just jot it down on my Excel spreadsheet.
Exactly.
Come back to it a couple of days later, looking at it on its own, and trying to think about it more objectively. And it's so satisfying to see the number of issues decrease over time, right?
So yes, you're gonna check them off your list.
Ooh, yes, so I'd be, you know, out here in the parking lot in my car checking them off my list. I'd come home and, you know, my husband would be saying, you know, how did it go tonight? And I'd say, I finished 17 issues.
Yes.
I just felt like very, very happy, and then I can tell him along the way how much more work I have to get done just because I got them all numbered out. So that's been very helpful to me as a tool along the way.
I love Excel and use it in all of my drafting and revisions because it's so nice. Because I write crime fiction and mystery, so I've got a lot of like clues and things I need to keep track of, and so it's nice to have it all written there. But then for editing, I do a very similar thing where I put everything I need to do and change or think about in that Excel, and it does take some of the emotion out of it. And so it's nice to just have it all in one place too, and be able to see it all like that. I adore Excel.
Me too.
Such a wonderful tool. So, Diane, I have just one last question for you. It's probably the hardest question, though. People tell me that all the time. I would love to know what your favorite book is right now. This is not your favorite book of all time.
Just right now.
Yeah, just right now. A book you've read recently that you really loved.
Okay. The first thing that came to mind is, I mentioned that, my full-time job, I work for AWP, it is a solid hour and a half to and from work. So I have spent a lot of time in the car, on my commute, so I do a lot of books on tape.
Yeah.
A lot. And sometimes I'll dabble, sometimes I have, several going on at one time, depending on what emotion I'm in, and I will pull up that book to, see me home. But I recently started Kevin Wilson's Nothing to See Here on audio, and it is so fantastic, so funny. The early chapters are absolutely devastating emotionally, but the writing is so good and fresh. And I came home after hearing the first couple chapters, and I told my husband, we have to go out to the car. I have to play some of this audiobook. And my husband is not, a big reader. He reads my stuff, but he doesn't read a lot of literary fiction. And so we went out to the car, and he was immediately engaged. And I think part of it, the writing is stellar, but for those of you who love audiobooks, the narration by the actress who's performing it, Maren Ireland, is so, so good. It's a voice that it grips you and just sounds so angry and on edge that it doesn't let you go. And I think that's what really attracted my husband to it, was just that voice.
The voice can make it or break it for me with an audiobook.
Yes, yeah, but she is amazing. And so now whenever we're just going out to get some gas, going to the supermarket, he wants to put this book on, and he's maybe promised not to listen to it without him, which makes me really angry because
that's
I love it and I want to finish it so bad that I have to wait for him.
Yeah. Well, I love it. That is definitely one I'll add to my list. I love asking that question because there's so many amazing books that come out, right? But
yes,
we can't always know about all of them or read all of them.
That's right.
Diane, thank you so much for chatting with me today and letting everybody get to know you a little bit better and telling us about your book, The All Night Sun, which everybody should go pre-order and buy.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much for listening. I am so grateful for everybody who listens and shares this podcast with their friends. Please make sure to rate and review where you can and tell your friends about it. And I'll see you next time.